Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready for more propaganda? Well, you're in the wrong place at the right time. Columbo Chronicles is for critical thinkers. Let's welcome the consumer advocate for justice. Here's the Rose, Rose Columbo.
Hi, everyone. It's the Rose, Rose Columbo, right here for you on Columbo Chronicles Live. And guess what? We are alive, and we are using our critical thinking. And I just want to let you know that today we have a fabulous returning guest. We're happy to have her back. Her name is Joyce Alexander Black. And just to let you know, next week on the 27th, we will have the fabulous Preston Rendell with his fabulous book, Thriller, Room for Killers. So I'm going to be back in just a minute. So don't change that dial. I'll be right back.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent.
Oh, okay.
Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts.
Next Wednesday.
Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
The Justice Club is back on Columbo Chronicles Live podcast. Join Rose Columbo at noon and find out what tips she will provide in a world of little justice.
Oh, we are back, and we are back with our fabulous returning guest, and her name is Joyce Alexander Black, and we are going to be talking about critical thinking. Is critical thinking becoming obsolete in America, Europe, Canada, Australia, New Zealand? And what about all the babble we are now experiencing with millions of people inside of our country who are speaking so many different languages that we have no idea who they are or what they're saying, because most of them who have come here illegally are unidentified. So talk about the lack of communication in the United States and English coming last. And then we have the attack on critical thinking. You will not want to miss this particular topic today, because you're going to need it, and so are your children. And we are going to enter into the world of the Justice Club.
The Justice Club is back on Columbo Chronicles Live podcast. Join Rose Columbo at noon and find out what tips she will provide in a world of little justice.
We are living in a world of little justice, and I am the legendary advocate for justice who created that term, advocate for justice, and I've been on the front lines for 30 years, helping victims of legal abuse become survivors. But apparently it hasn't gotten better. Unfortunately, it's gotten worse. So we're going to tackle some of the issues, and one of them is critical thinking. Let me tell you a little bit about our guest, Joyce Alexander Black. She is passionate about supporting you on your path towards living the best life. She holds a master's degree in clinical psychology. She's worked in Watson, Beverly Hills, and currently works as an international empowerment coach, a speaker. She's a master practitioner and hypnotherapist. She travels between Los Angeles and London, and she is married, and she has worked doing stress management, like myself, only on the holistic level of aromatherapy, reflexology, and facials and treatments that can release stress in your mind and body, believe it or not, which many doctors are now starting to recognize. So she's been in the television industry, Paramount Studios, Hollywood, California Universal Studios. She's worked at Walt Disney, and she also works one-on-one with family groups, and she also speaks at seminars. And her website is www.joycealexanderblack.com. She also has audios on stress management on iTunes. So she is all-rounded. But before we get started, I want to ask you a question. Are Americans, Europeans, Canadians, and Australians concerned about their businesses, their jobs, money, the law that are ever-changing based on AI and social media CEOs who work with the government, not for the government, but apparently work with the government, and I'm going to talk about that in just a bit and ask our guest what she thinks about it. And they are controlling the First Amendment, the AI and social media, it appears, without a congressional amendment granting them the authority to deny, ban, or suspend freedom of speech of any American and their opinion, facts, truth, or press, which is a constitutional law that we have, guaranteed rights. It is not a privilege. It is a right for Americans to be able to speak out and even to oppose their own government, unlike communist China and communist and Marxist and socialist nations who somehow drop dead if they do so through accident, I suppose. So on that note, they can control and influence political parties, donate to political parties, donate to specific political candidates of their preference, and so they can oppose anyone who is a free member of their site and oppose them by banning them, suspending them, or punishing them from whatever they posted or reporting them to the law enforcers as maybe bullying, hate speech, violence, but they are not law enforcers themselves. So that is an interesting point as well. They are expressing their critical thinking, but they are denying critical thinking to many, many people in America and around the world, which is what communist, Marxist, socialist, fascist nations do. So we're going to explore some of this and how it is happening in our country, where without constitutional amendment granting AI employees and social media CEOs the authority to deny free memberships to express their free critical thinking on their sites, which harms no one, and also are they creating czars that are actually targeting specific people who don't agree with them? How does this all operate and work? Because it is affecting critical thinking, and it could affect banning of books like they did during World War II. So we're going to talk about that with our special guest. So let's just go ahead and let's say hello to Joyce Alexander Black. Hi, Joyce. How are you doing today? Welcome back.
Thank you, Rose. I'm doing well. How are you doing today?
Well, I am kind of excited about exploring more about the critical thinking that is being denied in so many countries today, including it's happening here in America through AI and social media sites. And to me, that presents a problem because when they donate to particular parties and particular candidates of that one particular party, and they also donate to the Department of Justice on that particular party, It affects the entire constitution of guaranteed rights and turns, in my opinion, a guaranteed right to all Americans as a privilege and not a right controlled by AI CEO in bed with the federal government. So on that opinion of mine, and that's my opinion, what do you say?
Well, first, you have a great opinion. I love that. And I love how you, your whole show and what you do is all about taking these facts, and you read so many different articles and papers, and you put it together and you say, okay, well, I have to give this out to the public so they understand it. So what you've said is a very concerning time. And I mean, we live in a time where there's so many things that are happening that it doesn't even make sense. And one of the things I was thinking about is, how do you build people to start believing that their voice matters? And it's building self-esteem, and it's building the confidence. Like, I belong to different groups on WhatsApp and stuff, as most people do. And one of the things that I keep on promoting with people is, whatever your belief, write letters. And they're like, well, who's going to listen? Well, you know what? They do. They actually calculate it. My cousin met with the vice president of the United States, and she was trying to, she had some stuff that she had to deal with. But one of the things that they said, her office, is when people write letters, we have a way of calculating how many letters are coming in from different points, and that actually makes a difference. And so I've been really taking that on board and saying, okay, well, we need to do something. Our voice matters. And then maybe it starts with, like, you know, saying to yourself, well, what is important for me? What is it that I want to get across? And I was thinking a lot about how many people, when they write letters or when they have conversations with people about how do you express yourself without sounding bad? Because some people write letters, and I've seen a few of them, where it's like, some of the words I'm not going to say here, but say it wasn't very
seen them online too.
Right. So I was thinking that maybe we could just, like, have a moment to say, when you're expressing your disappointment or your dissatisfaction in someone's actions in some, you know, group or something like that, it's important to take a moment and say, I don't want to just be like trigger happy with the computer. I wrote this email, got it off my chest, and then boom. That's not going to give you the results you want. And it's important to be assertive and respectful and use the correct language. And, you know, like a suggested approach to encourage people is to start off with the first email, write it without any email on it because you don't want to make a mistake. And just start talking about how you feel. Like, when this happened, I feel. And then you can start it also in relationships. A lot of people wind up yelling at each other or thinking the other one's an idiot or some other not so nice words. And they don't know how to clearly communicate. And then their words are not forgiven or forgotten. Or some people will read a letter and say, this person's very angry in a very aggressive way, and they won't read it. So it's like taking it back to say, you know, allow for your feelings matter and express it in a way that's respectful. I start off with, I feel. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that it's important to let people know how you feel, because you may have taken it wrong in the tone of what they were actually writing or trying to put across, which is very dangerous online, because they accuse people of hate speech and hate violence. And the person, it could be a kid that was, or even an adult, who likes to joke around or sarcasm, and the other person is not experiencing that when they're reading it. And the next thing they know, they're talking to the police at their door. So it's very important to know all of these things and realize them and let people know to be careful about these things, because fact checkers are just people hired off the street. They aren't law enforcers. They aren't professors of communication. Many are from other countries, and the interpretation from different languages is different than in English. And so it can be taken different ways. Like, I've had foreigners ask me, you said this word, what does that mean? And one time I was out to lunch and with a very nice gentleman from England, and I said, oh, today's hump day, and he started laughing, and I said, well, what's so funny about that? And, you know, and he said, well, what did you mean? I said, well, I meant it's Wednesday and it's closer to the weekend, and he started laughing. He says, well, in England, that isn't what we mean it to be. And so, you know, it's a different interpretation, and that was an English-speaking country, but the words matter. Words matter. And so how somebody who's hired off the street, I'm not putting them down or anything, I'm sure they're qualified for their job, but are they interpreting what you're saying? Because I was once accused for putting a graph up about the COVID increases of the flu compared to the flu of COVID. And the fact checker accused me of sexual exploitation. I mean, that was so far off that it didn't even make sense. So what I'm saying is that when somebody is a fact checker and they are not a degreed person in communications or educated in America on our English language, and they come from a different country, they may not even realize that what you said was not what they are thinking it says or means. So it's very important that we're talking about this, because AI and social media, when they're accusing you of hate crimes, hate speech, sexual exploitation, and it's so funny because there's so many sex traffickers on social media, and it's such a huge problem, and not just with children, with people in general, that that what's amazing is they can't find them, but they can find a member who is not presenting or posting anything that of such a nature, and accuse them of the hate crime, hate speech, violence, sexual exploitation, whatever they view it as. So it's very serious we have these non-law enforcement watchers who are employees targeting people's posts. And I think it's really a dangerous situation we're in.
I agree with you. I mean, I put something on one time. I think it was like my mother or my friend or one of my siblings kidnapped me and took me to this amazing restaurant as a surprise. And then I was blocked from Facebook because of something about kidnapping. And I'm like, no, read it.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. The person may not have even read it, or
killing themselves. Right. And then it's like suicide prevention they gave me and all these things. And it's like, no, this was a joke. I mean, this was a nice thing. But there is that to be said, 100%. Yeah, 100%. But what I would like, I think that there's so many different things in life right now that's happening that people are overwhelmed, overstressed. It's like, you know, you're saying you did stress management, and I worked like, I did massage at one point, and I created recordings that are on iTunes, and I do psychotherapy and coaching. And one of the things that I'm finding that is so essential right now is like, how do people negotiate? And I'm not saying like there's one key thing to do that will work with everyone, but I came up with something and I thought it was really interesting. And I brought it to a couple different therapists, and their response was, well, like, when you work with a couple who are having issues, what's the plan? And first of all, I'm a therapist. I love therapists, but they're not negotiators. And I started thinking about it. When people need to express themselves, they need a negotiator because they need to hear your side, the other person's side, and the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. But then they need to come up with a plan. Like, for example, if somebody says they're going to be there at 12 o'clock and then they show up at 1 o'clock and they're like, well, and they start giving you all these excuses. Well, that's not okay. But if they keep on doing that and they don't see why it's not okay, we can, like in therapy, you could spend forever and go back to the childhood. When did this happen before? Blah, blah, blah. And that's important. But meanwhile, the couple's right there right now and they're like dealing with this. So I've been working on like teaching people how to negotiate. And I'm finding that it's actually super helpful on almost every situation, because what happens is you have to first stop and say, if I feel reactive, I shouldn't speak. Then, and that goes to the letters too, and all these things you're talking about politically, it's important to write letters. It's important to let your opinion out. But how do you say it in a way that you're giving, like, you're talking with respect? And one of the things it's talking about is, like, describe what bothers you without blaming or shaming. Just, you know, state the fact. Express your concerns clearly. And then state what bothers you and why it bothers you. Allow for a dialogue. Allow for the other person to have the opportunity to respond, like say at the end of the letter, if you would like to discuss it with me, feel free to email me or call me. And it's the kind of thing that what happens is a lot of people wind up thinking the other person's wrong and they're right. Or, and this is like overall, and how to break this. So actually people could start negotiating. People could start having critical thinking skills. Like if somebody keeps on doing the same thing and I keep on reacting the same way, how could I expect that anything will change? It starts with changing yourself. You have to change yourself. And that's what is kind of fascinating to me.
What's fascinating to me about the letters is that I was told that, because I've always written letters to congressmen and senators and so forth and presidents, and I always get a reaction. And so I wrote a letter to my nephew and when he got ill, and he was so shocked to get a handwritten letter, and he expressed it to my daughter that he cannot believe that he got an entire handwritten letter from his aunt, because no one writes letters hardly anymore. And he saved it because he was so touched by the fact that I took the time to handwrite it. So we're missing that today. I have letters from my childhood that I saved with my best friends who went on vacation to summer camp and all that, and sent me the written, because the mother, one of my best friends, who was like a mother to me, wrote me a beautiful letter 6 months before she passed away, and I put it in my Bible. It's that precious to have somebody write you a letter. They took the time. And one of the issues I have today is that, and I wanted to mention to you that they said one letter represents 1,000 people who are thinking the very same thing, but didn't write the letter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's what I call my politician, and they take it very serious when somebody, a letter, not a computer, writes a letter in their handwriting. And I mean, the other letters are important too, but if you write a letter, it's very important. And one of the things that is lacking in our schools today with the youth is I see so much violence that they are not negotiating anything. They're just beating up other kids. And because They are not being taught how to write and how to read. And this has been going on for generations because my friend's daughter graduated high school without knowing how to read, and she can't be the only one. And then also the writing is being diminished by the computer and the critical thinking going along with it, because when we write books, we actually write what we know, and our experiences in life are part of it, and it's got that human touch. Now they want you to go on the computer and have the computer do all the work, do all the effort, do everything, the thinking for you, and you can have a book immediately and become this bestseller, but you did nothing to use your brain to actually create that work and have that passion that goes into authors who actually spend time researching and writing. What do you think?
Well, I think there is actually, I think there's actually a point where people are getting some really fast editing from AI, which I think is fantastic.
Well, I'm not talking about the editing. I'm not talking about the editing. They will write
About writing it. Right. We live in a time where, like, we're talking about writing letters. Honestly, I don't know if people under 40 would even like I remember in the day having my own stationery, you know, it just like not, no one does that. But if they could write and I mean, it'd be great if they did, but if not, an email and just like send it to, like you're saying, send it to your senator, send it to your governor, send it to the president, whoever it is in whatever country. It's very important because you think your voice doesn't matter, but it actually does quite a bit.
Well, I can tell you how much it matters by a letter, Joyce, is because I wrote a letter. No, I sent a telegram. I'm sorry. I sent a telegram to President Reagan.
Wow.
And
And
I've always been concerned about politics because my mother was a president of the Republican Women's Party. So she always had me involved. So I always paid attention, and I heard on the radio they were going to dump the cheese into the ocean, the surplus cheese, and I thought, oh, my God, why can't they just send it to the poor? There's a lot of people in America who can't even afford to buy cheese, you know, who are poor. So
right.
I sent him a telegram because it was like a few days away that they were going to dump this cheese, tons of cheese into the ocean. And so I sent him a telegram, and I said something funny because I knew he liked to joke. And so I said something like, "Dear President Reagan," I have the telegram somewhere. I saved it. And I said, "Please free the cheese and release it to the custody of the people in America." And I got a long letter from his director of agriculture explaining everything and telling me how much President Reagan enjoyed and got a chuckle out of my telegram to free the cheese, release it to the custody of people.
Wow.
In America. And we are not going to dump the cheese. We're going to give it to the poor. And with
that
one telegram.
That's so amazing, you know, and it's like you never know what happens with one voice. Like, as you're saying that, I'm not joking. I have a coaster right here that says, "The future doesn't belong to the faint-hearted. It belongs to the brave, Ronald Reagan." And I just got that. I just got that being in the Ronald Reagan's Museum in Simi Valley. And it was so gorgeous. But anyway, besides that, what you're saying, it's like, I think that all of this comes around to people really believing, like, yes, if you put this on, you put your thoughts on Facebook or Instagram or, you know, X and not Twitter or whatever it is, social media, there you will get a following from it. If you want to do that, fantastic. Do your thing. what I'm just saying and what you're saying is by your example, and I love the idea of a joke in there, is, and if you don't have a joke, it's still okay, but to get your voice out, this is a way that you can actually be heard. And there's so many people today are just focused on my way or the highway. I'm right, you're wrong. And there's a famous therapist who used to say, should is a bad word. Don't should on me and I won't should on you. And I'll never forget that. It was Dr. Pat Allen. And it's really, really true. How do we shift from a time in this planet to people who just want to hate and want to destroy? And they say, well, the other person's doing that. We're not. Well, let's stop with blaming. Let's deal with what can we do with what's happening in our area, and start making some conscious decisions. Like, how do we set boundaries so when we feel hurt, we don't, lose control? Here's something I can give the audience that's a free golden nugget. Unconscious people react to, like, in an aggressive way. Conscious people restrict, calm themselves down, and say things like, I didn't like that. That didn't feel good. I felt hurt. I felt uncomfortable. And the process of all these different things come down to, if you believe in yourself, you learn how to not be reactive in life, and you learn how to express yourself with feelings. And I'm not expecting anyone to be like Gandhi or myself, but I am saying that it's a good idea to know what you can do. And then by doing it, you can do better. And there you go.
Well, actually,
there you go.
Actually, here's a definition of one of from the University of Louisville, so you can tell us what you think about this. It says, critical thinking is the intellectually disciplined process of actively and skillfully conceptualizing, applying, analyzing, synthesizing, and or evaluating information gathered from or generated by observation, experience, reflection, reasoning, or communication as a guide to belief and action. And what do you think about that definition?
I think that's really good. But to break it down for people who, let's say, have a situation, because I was thinking about this, before creating how to, like, use critical thinking for the world, it's let's take it into the homes. How do you relate to your loved ones? Everyone talks to me about, oh, my family is the most toxic, and this, I can give you stories and stories. I mean, I wouldn't, but I mean, I've heard a lot of stories, being that everyone may feel that way. So now what do you do with that? Because then you don't talk to your friends because you don't want them to know, or you do talk to your friends and you overload them. So it's like a balancing act. What do you do with those feelings? And what I'm saying is, take the time, process, maybe meditate would be good, things that will help you get connected to yourself, some yoga, things like that. And then you can go out and start relating better and say how you feel, not you did this, say I felt, hurt, uncomfortable when you did this, and it I feel really disappointed, and I was hoping for a better communication and a better result. It's so much better than when you didn't keep the time and you were late, I couldn't do this and I was thrown, and it's such a blame shame, and we all fall into it. It's realizing
I think that's why it's important to bring this to the schools, because especially young people, because they need to learn it so they can take it through their lives without fighting with other kids, without bullying other kids. Something has to be wrong when you're beating up another student and knocking their head on the cement and nearly killing them, and they end up in
Absolutely.
An emergency, which is happening in this country right now. And it's out of control, and this should never
yeah.
be happening. We didn't grow up with this type of behavior in our schools and against students. It was rare, and the violence of it is way different than a couple of boys hitting each other a couple of times after school or something. This is different.
Completely.
This is very violent.
Completely.
And I believe this critical thinking needs to be taught in the school. I really do.
I do, too. I think that, you know, I've really been thinking about this today, going, how do you get there? You have to first implement it in your own change of consciousness and thinking and being mindful and saying, when I talk to people, like when you know that you're upset with someone, your body will react in a certain way. Some people, their heart gets really fast, or their hands get sweaty, or they feel like they want to run, or there's a lot of different things. But when you learn, like, oh, notice yourself. Oh, I'm feeling reactive. That means I can't speak because I'm not going to say it right, and I'm going to hurt someone, probably someone I love. And to take that and to say, okay, what am I going to do with that? And how do I make this better? How do I work with this? And really trying to pinpoint that you're allowed to have boundaries. It's important to have boundaries. It's important to express your feelings, that your feelings matter, and to do it in a respectful way. So you also could ask questions like, what do you think about that? And how does that work for you? And when you start having these questions that are like open-ended, even yes and no questions, helps people feel like they're engaging with you. And
well, if we don't get
that,
a hold of this, Joyce, if this country doesn't, and the Department of Education doesn't take this seriously and reinstate the values and traditions back into the public schools, there are kids who were, there was a boy, and these are lots of stories, not, but this just one that just happened where the father, I don't know, took the kid's phone away or something to that effect to punish him, and he shot him. He shot his dad. Now he's going to jail, you know, probably for who knows how long. But this is happening in this country, and people need to realize how serious it is to be able to do critical thinking. I mean, not to the depth, you know, into great depth, but like you're saying, there are simple steps that people can be taught that, okay, let me control myself and maybe even ask themselves, what did I do to cause this? Did I do something to cause it? I think we have to also look at ourselves. What do you think?
Oh, 100%. But the first thing is, when a person's reactive, they can't look at the other person themselves. All they are is like ready to fight. So the most important thing is to just first be aware, okay, I'm going to fight. I'm going to say words that are mean. I'm going to, you know, get aggressive, you know, in one way or another, and calm that down. And like say, this means I can't speak. It's like I was talking to someone the other day, and they're like, well, I was frustrated. That's why I needed to talk. I said, no, because you're frustrated, this means when you're not supposed to talk. That's your key. It's like, but I felt like I needed to speak. I said, that's when you're not supposed to speak. Like, but that's against my body. That's like disrespecting my body. I said, no, it's the opposite. It's not about you just being able to express when you feel bad. It's being able to control your anger, control your frustration. When you feel bad, you feel bad and you're going to hurt. It's like, I'm hurt, I'm going to hurt you. It's not right. But if you say, I'm hurt, I need to express my feelings, absolutely. And even if they were disrespectful, doesn't give you that right to be disrespectful. So you speak it in a respectful way, and you talk about, I felt betrayed, I felt wounded, I felt crushed, I felt vulnerable, whatever your feeling was, and you're not making the other person have to let you talk because you have anger going on. It doesn't make sense. But people don't know that. Like, if you're angry, that means be quiet. They think, if I'm angry, I have to take it out. No. Wait. Take time. Calm yourself. Like, take some breaths and get calm. Take a walk for 15 minutes. And then while you're walking, start thinking, okay, after you blame them and they're stupid and they're shit and they're whatever they are, and you get past all that, write it out if you want, then what did I do? What could I have done that caused this? And that may need where you might need therapy and get someone to really help you see why this keeps, if this is a story that keeps on playing out, why it plays out that way for you. And until you understand that, you'll keep on playing this very difficult movie in your life. And it's very hard to change because people want to think, hey, I got it right. But none of us has it right. We're still here. So we have work to do. And being available for that and taking and saying like Michael Jackson's song, The Man in the Mirror. I know it's old and a lot of people don't even, know Michael Jackson who are young, but whatever. It's a good song because it's like it all does start with the man in the mirror or the woman in the mirror or the person in the mirror. The point is that when we can really learn how to communicate our anger. Well, first, we can't communicate our anger. I'm sorry about that. Like, I shouldn't have said that part. It's when we learn that when we're angry, we say nothing. That is one of the hardest things in the world to do because every part of our body wants to let that person know. And I think I read somewhere Marianne Williams said, when I'm upset, I don't want to just tell them what's wrong. I want a thesis paper, and I want two thesis papers back saying how they understood that, how wrong they were, why they were wrong, and it's never going to happen. It's never going to happen.
You touched on something that I had to practice because I'm Italian, so we automatically are around families who react, and everyone knows that.
I mean, of course,
nationalities that do that too, but we love and then we're angry and then we love and we're angry and we apologize and da 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 da. It's a circle of behavior, and so I actually had to train myself, and I still do, not to react to people who are angry or saying mean things, because I don't want to get myself upset over something that they're upset about and I'm not. And and I'm willing to say, okay, I'm sorry, I didn't, all right, that isn't what I meant, but to stay calm and not get into the drama of it so it escalates. And that you have to really practice it if you're in those situations, because the reaction is there. But controlling it is something I have to practice.
We all have to practice. I'm telling you, this is the hardest work on the planet, is not to point. I mean, someone said this. It's really funny.
Did you just say that to me? Are you serious?
Right. But, think about this. If you take a finger and you point it at someone, you got three fingers pointing back. I mean, the point is that we all need to work on ourselves. Like, there's nobody who does this, has this perfect. But if we could start realizing that when we feel bad, doesn't mean we need to speak. That usually means we're not supposed to speak. And it's like, I hate to use this analogy, but it's the best one I could think of, which is when you see people who are very unfortunate in life, let's say homeless and maybe alcoholic or drug addict, if somebody says something that upsets them, they're screaming at each other, everyone's angry with each other, And there's no communication. There's no pausing. There's no respect for one another as human beings. And what I see a lot today is people reacting like that instantaneously. Like it makes me so sad what you said about the son, because he killed his dad and he might not have intended, probably we're going to hope he didn't intend that. He just was angry in the moment. But when you have a world that is accepting some horrific things as a part of, let's say, war, then it's going to go to everyone's life. And more
violence. Well, you can look at our government
and
allowing lawlessness at our borders and allowing everybody and anybody into the USA, non-vetted, no background check. We don't know if they have mental illnesses.
Yeah.
We don't know if they have crime records. The FBI does, but we don't. And the FBI can't do anything about it because somehow there's a policy that says they can violate the constitutional state and federal laws of secure borders and defending and protecting the American people and the children. We have 85,000 children missing and nobody knows where they went. That is absolutely lawlessness and stunning and gross negligence. And they have blood on their hands, in my opinion, for keeping those, violating our constitutional guaranteed rights and harboring, aiding, and abetting people that we don't even know who the heck they are. But they want to know everything about us, and they track us, and they ban us and suspend us from freedom of speech. But these people are coming here, and they can beat up the police. They can do whatever they want. And they are given the pass. This is absolute lawlessness and very frightening. So communication now is so much more important than it was. I'm going to take a break. You can get a glass of water if you like, just for a minute. And I'm going to tell you what just came out in the news, get your opinion on it, okay? And we will be back a moment.
you go ahead and get your water.
Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Colombo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world. Written with an Orwellian twist, will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Colombo, available at Amazon.com.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trial. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
The Justice Club is back on Colombo Chronicles Live Podcast. Join Rose Colombo at noon and find out what tips she will provide in a world of little justice.
Hi, we're talking to Joyce Alexander Black, and she is our very special returning guest, and she's talking about her thoughts and tips on critical thinking, communication, and why can't we all just get along? Because we're not communicating with our government. They aren't communicating with the people, and many are holding themselves above the law and not following constitutional law, and we can't communicate to them that we want a lawful country. We want our constitutional rights guaranteed. We don't want to see freedom of speech ripped off from under us by AI and CEOs of private corporations who are making tons of money off of advertisers for free content by free memberships, so people get addicted and they're spending their time and their knowledge and their opinions and facts on their issues on these sites for free, where they would have had to pay journalists or writers and copywriters to write content for them, but they have the world writing content, and now they're controlling your freedom of speech as a privilege to be on their free membership while they make billions of dollars, because the highest number of memberships gets the highest number of advertising dollars. So it's really a vicious circle we really have to look at and communicate with our senators about what is really happening between AI and social media and our jobs and our communication and our constitution. And today I came across the Gateway Pundit, and it said, Elon Musk, FBI portal on Twitter. Auto-deleted all communications after 2 weeks. Automatically deletes all communications after 2 weeks to likely hide government's involvement in censoring speech. And this goes right into our topic today. It says, at what point do we stop and ask ourselves if Chris Wray's FBI is really on the side of the American people, or can we? Will they target us if we ask such a question? Because these are people who are put in positions of power, and many of them have a lot of money, so they can afford to file lawsuits. We can't, and they can also, people in public office have access to our tax dollars for lawsuits, so they aren't spending their money in the court system. They're spending our money when they target people. So it also says ex-owner Elon Musk told Tex Lindsay in an interview this week that FBI had a Twitter portal that deleted all communications after 2 weeks to hide its nefarious request. That way, FOIA, F-O-I-A, Freedom of Information Act, requests would turn up nothing on their communications after 2 weeks. Elon Musk, and this is coming from multiple parts of the government, from the State Department, the FBI, Homeland Security, from really many parts of the government. It wasn't just one arm of the government. There was this FBI portal that automatically deleted all communications after 2 weeks. So we actually don't know what was said there. In fact, this strikes me as a Freedom of Information Act violation. Freedom of information is so important because you shouldn't be able to delete orderly delete things after 2 weeks. There's a little known agency in the State Department called the Global Engagement Center, which most people have never heard of, but they might have been the single worst offender because they demanded the suspension of, at one point, over 250,000 accounts, which I think all Twitter largely complied with. But the suspension demands were so broad that they accidentally demanded a suspension of a journalist on CNN and an elected Canadian politician. It was just an incredibly broad sweep. What do you think about that, Joyce?
So many different things on that. You covered a lot of topics there. I think that we, like what I was saying before, connected to this, whether it's Elon Musk or what's happening in the world, it's all about what we allow.
I don't think Elon Musk approved of it. The government just did it.
Right.
It was an automatic portal.
Right. I don't mean that one in right now. I was just saying, like, in general, what's happening is that we keep on allowing people to get away with bad behavior. We allow bloodshed, and we just, like, accept it, and we just keep on accepting, and it will only get worse until we have a very strong boundary that says no, no more. This AI, what's going to happen in the future? What will it have access to? I mean, has anyone ever watched the movie The Odyssey? I mean, this is not a surprise to most people, yet they keep on pushing us in this direction where they do have control. And are they on the side of the people? That's a very good question. I think everyone can answer in different ways. But I think at the end of the day, we have to take a look at this and say, well, where it's kind of like what we're talking before about responsibility. We can blame. Where is our responsibility? Are we writing letters? Are we making sure we're letting everybody know, whether it's in our social or some other ways? I mean, we have a life and we have limited time. Maybe we could spend 10 minutes a day and say, okay, 10 minutes a day, I'm going to write letters. I'm going to talk about
how this
is
important. Well, you know what I think is important, Joyce, is that you said, you know, we have a life and we have things to do, but how important is it to have freedom and freedom of expression and freedom of press? And, I mean, without that, we're a communist dictatorship, and we have no rights. They're going to call it a privilege, just like they tried to call Social Security a welfare payment that the young people were having to pick up for their parents and their grandparents who paid into it all of their lives through hard work and had no choice that the government took this money and promised it as a government retirement plan rather than allowing them to use that money and put it in their own IRA where they would gain interest over those years. And then they tried to switch it so that the young people were thinking that they were the ones who were picking up that tab when in fact caused by the government manipulating and removing Social Security many times over the generations until the point that they never paid it back. And then they tried to switch it and make it look like the seniors and the elderly were taking from the youth and from the government. And then they turn it around and they start funding illegals and harboring them and funding them and giving them $10,000 checks. I mean, this makes no sense.
Absolutely.
Talk about a lack of communication.
Mm-hmm. It's, you know, how do we figure out how to make these things in life work in a way that we get people more involved in noticing what's happening? I think it starts with a person starting in their own personal life, because I don't think a person could actually, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think so, could actually start being really proactive for their world when they're not proactive or happy in their life. I think that it starts with learning how to manage your life, manage your stress, learn how to not get involved in conversations that could go in a you know, stressful situation. When you learn how to control your anger and then you could express yourself, you can write letters, you can express yourself to other people, and, you know, do your best to make sure that you're heard.
Well, I started the grassroots movement years ago, and I founded it in Southern California here, and because the victims of injustices, which we're all victims now, if you're a legal American, you're a victim of this lawlessness that's going on and this skyrocketing cost of living that is ridiculous to pay for the illegals that are inside of our country. And so, well, the American people are determining, should I put gas in my car or buy more food or turn on the heat or the air conditioner and so forth. This is insane, and people need to say enough is enough. We've had it, and we're tired of all of these games.
Right, this is happening all over the world, and it's worse in some countries than others. And the fact that it's happening in America, one would never think that. The amount of things that are happening all over the world today, one would never have thought that. And we have to use our voice to be able to be heard, because as we know, when you let bad behavior persist, it will only, or allow it to exist, it will only persist. And
exactly.
I think that, you know, I love the fact that you wrote that letter to Ronald Reagan. I think it's hysterical. And it's great that you found a way to put a joke in there. I mean, that's brilliant. I love it.
Well, that's because I'm an advocate for justice, so it fit right into all the 20 to 25% of people in jail who are innocent but plea bargained because of something they didn't do or were found guilty on circumstantial evidence. There was a lot there. That's the statistics. 20 to 25% of people in jail are innocent, and they just don't have money for a lawyer. Yeah, it is, isn't that, in America, yeah. But anyway, on that happy note, we have to close. But thank you so much, Joyce. We'll have you back. Can't wait, because we do need to let people know how important thinking, critical thoughts and negotiations, as you said, whether it's with family or friends or students or the politicians, we need to bring that back, and we need to keep reminding them how important it is, because without communication, we have nothing, right?
And it all, yes, 100%, it all starts with us. So if you want to get a hold of me, please check out my website, joycealexanderblack.com. And you can also find my recordings on iTunes. Just put my name, Joyce Alexander Black. And Rose, thank you so much for having me. And I look forward to seeing you next month. Have a great, great day.
You too, Joyce. Bye-bye. Blessings. Stay safe.
Bye-bye. Thanks. You too.
Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Colombo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world. Written with an Orwellian twist, will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Colombo, available at Amazon.com.
Well, my friends, time flies, and now is the time to say goodbye. Thanks so much for being part of the Colombo Chronicles family. You are appreciated. Please do it now. Bookmark. Push that like, share, and follow button. Oh, and don't forget to comment below and stay in touch. Make your family part of the Colombo family. Until next Wednesday at noon, remember, God loves you, and so does the Rose.